Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the subject of Doctrine of Atonement. And we're so glad you could join us this morning, this beautiful autumn morning. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And we will start with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 220 of Divinity Course in General Collectania. It says, what is the atonement? It is self-sacrifice that finds the way for others through the experience that meets and overcomes error, then shows this way to others who have fled to save them from a similar experience. Mentally treat yourself that nothing can govern your actions or come to your thought that is not from divine mind. Be strong there. So many sinister suggestions come to mind. Watch, and each day commit yourself to the care of our one parent. Trust him. Turn to him in all your ways for light to direct your footsteps and wisdom to enable you to separate the tares from the wheat, so that you can judge well between the human or the evil suggestion and the good and divine impulse. The liberty of the sons of God is for each one to desire God and for each one to desire for his mortal neighbor just what he desires for himself. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful. Thank you. Okay, Karen, the watching point.
Watch number 441. Watch that you do your part in bringing divine power into activity in this human sense. When Mrs. Eddy was confronted by a lawsuit in 1899, she wrote to a student, pray daily, twice at least, to divine love to give you success in this case of libel. And then realize for yourselves that love and truth and action on your part, for truth does not work for you unless you work, will give you the victory. Science comes from the Latin word scio, which means to know. Christian science is Christ knowing, in which we do the knowing and Christ does the work. Our recognition of the human need, our knowledge of the operation of truth, and our affirmations thereof, plus our detection and elimination of any deterrent lying in the path, put divine power into operation. Jesus said, my Father worketh hitherto, and I work. Jesus' work was the understanding of the utilization of divine power and his application of it to the human need. God's work was the accomplishment of all good on earth. God is the doer, and man is the knower.
Thank you. Okay, comments?
There's a statement in this book called God is All that Clady says. I like this when it says God, man is the knower. If we are certain that we know some truth, then we can be very sure that it is God knowing and that we are knowing as God. I often thought in these last few years since coming here, I always thought I felt separate. I was trying to know something about the truth rather than just letting God be my mind and God's knowing the truth. As the reflection of man, I reflect that knowing. And so that made it closer, gave me more of a oneness with the divine mind.
Thank you very much. Who wrote that book?
It's called God is All, and it's a lecture by Ronald Clety.
Okay, thank you. Well, in the definition of God in the glossary, it's all-knowing, right? And I always, when I work with that, if he's all-knowing, then I'm all-knowing as his reflection. And that's why you can't ever lose anything or not know something you need to know. And this is the working of it. Someone asked me this week about the watching point. Well, what does that mean? Action on your part. And truth doesn't work for you unless you work. What does that mean? What action?
The action is the knowing. You know, you must know the truth.
Mm-hmm. You?
Yeah.
Kind of listen
listen and obey. Thank you. Who else?
I was just going to say, just to turn away at all times from the false picture and see what's true, even though it may not look like it. And I thought that watching point just summed up the whole of Christian Science.
Thank you.
I mean, if it tells us that, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free, it means that man must know the truth. You know, we have to do something. And that is standing with the truth. That's why it tells us to turn always to God. If you turn, you know the truth.
Thank you.
You need the truth that you know.
And I'm grateful for this, you know, the thought of action on your part. Because years ago, before coming to Science, I knew something was wrong. And I went to therapy and I spoke to her for a couple weeks. And I'm like, okay, what practical steps forward do you have for me? She's like, that's not how it works. And I was so annoyed I left, you know, and then I read about Buddhism and other things. And nobody has anything practical for you to do, only Christian Science. Yes. And that makes sense because only God knows what your purpose and place is.
Thank you.
Yes. I think also part of the action is to watch our thinking. When it says here, plus our detection and elimination of any deterrent lying in the path. So we have to be watching too. That's part of our work.
Thank you.
I came from the Boston Christian Science and did not understand why it didn't work. And then when I found Plainfield, it was very simple. Steps, practical steps, little things. They with heavy work all every week, you know, come to the round table. And I saw a huge difference in healing and understanding. And to me, that was the action part on my part, what I needed to do, the watching, the listening, the obedience, the consistency. So it was.
Thank you. And
this is my action part. Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
No, my action part was when I came to Plainfield too. And Mrs. Evans, you know, she would give practical examples of how she used the truth. And I had no idea, like many people have said before, I used to read, yes, but I wasn't applying the truth. I wasn't applying it. I would, you know, go about my way the way I used to do. And she was just showing us how if something comes up, like you use the truth that you know, you say something, you know, to defy the lie that's trying to mesmerize you. And that's when I started to do that.
Thank you. Yeah. You showed us a very practical way. As we've spoken before, Gilbert Carpenter showing us how Mrs. Eddy lived it. But this is something you don't conjure up on the day of the problem. It is the action on your part has to be consistent action through your life. And at least when you found Science, the living of the Sermon on the Mount, the living of the Lord's Prayer, forgiving your debtors, all of these things culminate in right action and right knowing. And it's very important Mrs. Evans used to say, for readers, you only read as good as the week before, the life that you lived the week before. And if you were not living a science, good, you cannot get up there and read. I mean, maybe you can, and maybe you will fool some people, but you won't fool the spiritually minded, which is actually what's happened in many churches where this isn't being lived, and then they get up and read, and it just is a tinkling
sounding brass and a tinkling.
It kind of reminds me of what Martha Wilcox says about Daniel in the lion's den, and he couldn't wait until he got there or after today, to handle what he handled. It had to be something that he'd been handling all along. And so it's like that. You just can't come into it all of a sudden. And the little things matter almost sometimes more than the big things, because they're the things that aren't, you know, they don't seem like a big deal to you. Oh, well, it's not a bit, but it is a big deal. And that's where you move along and get your progression from.
Thank you.
I see my favorite line in Christian Science fits very well with what you're saying. You have it as you leave it.
You're right. It does. Your favorite line. Absolutely. The word action is conduct, behavior, demeanor, acting. That's how you conduct your life. And then to realize, because we're to realize for yourselves that love and truth and action on your part. So realize is to impress on the mind as a reality. There again, this is in the knowing of it, the trusting in it, impressing on your mind as a reality, life, truth, and love. And this is a day-by-day process that we do every day. And in doing that, you are ready for challenges, your own and others and your nations and the world.
I think that what you said, Mary, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I think what you said makes me think of Jesus beheld in science the perfect man. And, you know, this perfect man is what I think is echoing through everything I've heard already today. You know, and this perfect man is a perfect you, me, all of us. And it's inclusive. It's seamless. It's unified. It's a unity of good.
Thank you. All right, Jeremy, the golden text.
Second Chronicles. The Lord is with you while ye be with him. And if ye seek him, he will be found of you.
Thank you. It's a beautiful golden text.
And it puts a lot on us.
It puts a lot on us, yeah. To be seeking him and finding him, and he will. So that what we talked about last week, I think it was something Nancy sent from Unity of Good, that choose ye this day who you will serve. And if you serve God, let him be your all in all. And I think about that during the day when a thought will come that tends to, or an erroneous thought will try to get into your thinking. Who am I serving? If I accept this thought, I'm not serving God. And it brings me right back to where I need to be. So this is seeking God, and this is feeling his presence, his oneness. I and my Father are one. The Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works, and the Father hath not left me alone. That idea of oneness is so powerful. Carrie sent beautiful articles this week, everyone. And one was the importance. It said the most important word in the English language is Emmanuel, which interpreted what?
God with
us. I say it often, and it comes from where? Does that come from in the Bible?
So Isaiah.
Isn't that Luke? Comes from Luke.
Matthew. The birth of Jesus. It's so beautiful. It gives me chills every time I read it. Emmanuel, God with us, which being interpreted. So, and then it goes on to say it's actually not an English word, it's a Hebrew word. And it says the most beautiful word in the whole of all languages, I guess. So think on that and let it thrill you and read that chapter in Matthew, the birth of Jesus. And God with us, and He is. And declare always your oneness with Him. Seek Him. He'll be found of you. He's with you and you're with Him. Because you have set your love upon me, therefore I will deliver you. I will set you on high. Because you have known my name, you will call upon me and I will answer you. I will be with you in trouble. I will deliver you and honor you, and with a long life, I will satisfy you and show you my salvation. 91st. But there's a condition, isn't it? That because you have done this, you have known my name, you have loved me, therefore I will answer you. And that's really what the watching point is about.
In the 23rd Psalm, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. I mean, it all means the same thing, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
But it's us doing something.
All right. I'm going to start today with Shardell, what you gave us. And you could read it all. It was beautiful.
This is from our lesson 470 in Science and Health, the relations of God and man, divine principle and idea are indestructible in science, and science knows no lapse from nor return to harmony. And I like what Herbert Eustace said about God's abundant supply. I thought this went with the harmony. There is a constant demand for all of you to give. That is the law of God. There can neither be a demand or supply of anything without both qualities of mind being instantly present. Insist on this, and you will have no fear whatever of lack. You are in the realm of mind every instant. This is not the era of matter or of mental argument, but this is the final era of pure realization. Stay with this and find divine love as embracing all in its tender care. You are not outside of this all-embracing divine love. Trust it. And thank God that you know what you know of infinite truth. Our hearts need to be full of thankfulness all the time. Then, as Mrs. Eddy so beautifully puts it, when thought is lost in the evidence of mind, the healing takes place. Get into that evidence of mind, that allness, that completeness of mind, and stay there, and you will find your heart rejoicing. Mm-hmm.
So beautiful. We can be so grateful. As Imogen often says, that we have these early workers, these their books, their works. And Eustace, and I know Tony loves Eustace, it's clear, correct teaching. It's clear, correct teaching. It is. Simple, clear, and he was excommunicated, but he never hated. He just continued on doing his work with joy, maintaining his oneness with the Father. And that word eminence is exaltation, summit, highest part. And one of the best ways to get there is to really be grateful for God. Thankfulness. Your heart is just overwhelmed with love for Him. It's an instant connection, not for the things necessarily that he's given you, but for him, for God, for life, truth, love. Get into that place and stay in that place, and you'll be in the Father's house, and you will be one with him. You are not God, but God expresses himself through you, if you let him. Thank you, Shardy. Okay, Nancy.
Yes, I wrote about Psalms 46. Be still and know that I am God. And in Webster, still is to silence, to calm or quiet, as tumult, agitation, or excitement, not be disturbed. The phrase be still uses a Hebrew term which can be rendered as relax, let go, which I really liked, or stop. It implies an act of surrender, a release of striving and hostility. Goes on to say, in literal terms, this verse does not mean to sit quietly and listen for God. That interpretation is not entirely flawed, of course. God's people can be still by faithfully trusting God to be their source of strength. That trust and submission is key to what it means to know that I am God. It invites worshipers to consider the peace God gives those who trust in him. He triumphs over those who wage war, and he will be given his proper respect among the people of earth. And that was from Bible Reference. As God addresses Israel, he is not just telling them to be still or rest. God commands them to stop fighting, open their eyes to who he is. In some translations, it is phrased as cease striving. It's easy to be fearful when things aren't going well or when we are faced with challenges and conflicts in our lives. In the midst of struggles, however, God tells his people to wake up and recognize who's on their side. In that light, the tone of this verse can be read, stop striving, stop fighting, stop trying to do things on your own. Stop stressing about the battle ahead and trust me. Wake up. I am the Lord. I am your refuge and your strength. You have nothing to fear or worry about when I am with you. I will fight your battles and deal with your enemies. Step back, open your eyes, and acknowledge who I am and what I can do. Be patient, be still, and let me go to work. This verse encouraged the children of Israel in a time of war and can be just as comforting to believers today. In their struggle and strife, in the midst of conflict and life turmoil, sometimes we need to open our eyes and step back, stop what we're doing, and acknowledge who God is and what he can do. And doing so provides comfort in the chaos and peace amid struggle. I just thought that was just so practical.
It is. It's wonderful.
That's perfect. Yeah.
I have never really thought of be still as relax and letting go and stopping all this. I do know it means stopping all this fussing, but it's very beautiful. And right now, you know, this political atmosphere, so important that we
not get mesmerized.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
to see what God is doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Peace be still.
Yes, peace be still to that storm.
Well, I think of, you know, think of David going after Goliath. Mm-hmm. He was still, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Where was that from, Nancy? Where was that from?
It was from Christianity.com. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We'll be hosted in the round table.
Yeah, Linda's back.
Okay. Back up to the top. Yeah, we're right on to the... Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Week.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
And after having a restless night. I was thinking about that during the night, and often if I'm up during the night, I know it's a time to be still and know that I am God and to be praying for whatever comes into consciousness. But I turn to in the Blue Book where Mrs. Eddy says, this is in 1907, before coming to Christian Science, from the time of the belief that I came into the world, I was troubled with sleeplessness. After coming to Science, I could drop to sleep at any time. I must yet come out of that belief. Eating, drinking, sleeping, being clothed are only a human concept. These and the belief of life, substance, and intelligence in matter must all be given up for the immortal. The Christ takes us out of the discord of not eating, sleeping, etc., and gives us the pleasurable side of it, takes us out of the pain and gives us the pleasure, then replaces that with the spiritual. Life is immortal, eternal. There is but one mind. All is mind. There is no matter. We must give up all for Christ and Christian Science. We must come to see we do not depend upon eating, sleeping, etc., for life and health, but depend on mind. The spiritual cannot be touched. And I love that. And, you know, the story of Mrs. Eddy, where she would be could be up all night, sometimes not feeling well, all kinds of things, or all her workers would be up working, and then she'd be sitting at the desk, just happy as could be in the morning, like nothing had happened, and they were all wiped out.
I read that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it is. And that's, to me, what this is telling us. And this is goes back to the watching point, too, of the knowing the truth and knowing that God is in control of all things. Peace be still. Beautiful. Thank you. All right. Now, in the responsive reading, there's a lot about opening your eyes, or excuse me, opening your ears, okay? People with hearing problems and other things, remember to open your ears, to be quiet, to be listening for God's voice. You can't be one with Him if you're not listening to Him, can you?
No.
You can read and you can pray and you can tell Him your side of the story. But you've got to open your ears.
And also, you can't hear God if you're trying to listen to a lot of other noise.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? If you're paying attention to something else,
right,
it's going to be tough to hear what God is telling you. So we need to. Yeah.
Go ahead, Florence.
No, it's something you cultivate. I think if you're regularly doing it, before you know it, it becomes easier to hear what God is saying to you.
Yes.
Yeah, and we have to be open to the right, you know, to the right channel, if you will.
We used to be told in Sunday school that G-O-D, channel G-O-D.
W-G-O-D.
I like that.
Or K-G-O-D for the West Coasters.
Yeah. Spoken for a West Coaster. Yeah.
And science teaches so beautifully that we have the capacity, the creation has the capacity naturally to listen to the Creator. That's so wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Yep. We've told the story many times about the sheep and the shepherd, and how all these other shepherds could be out calling to the sheep and they'd just be munching on the grass, not paying any attention. And as soon as the shepherd, their shepherd, came and did call to them, they came running across the field to them. I will listen for thy voice.
That's right.
So make sure you practice that open ear listening. Carrie sent a beautiful article call The Listening Ear, which I'm sure we'll have in The Liberator, because the theme of The Liberator is, do you hear what I hear, from that beautiful Christmas carol. Do you hear what I hear? Do you hear of God's love and care for his universe? And she writes, it's by Louise Martin, many a fervent prayer has apparently gone unanswered, not because God does not hear, but because thought has not been receptive to God's answer. The listening ear has the assurance of answered prayer. The still, small voice of truth is always speaking, but it remains unheard when men are unwilling to hear. And then a very beautiful description of when the heavenly host proclaimed the birth of the Savior, only the wakeful, watchful shepherds caught the overture from on high and received it with joy and thanksgiving in the silence of the Syrian night. When the jealous and materialistic Herod was informed of the birth of the Christ child, he decreed the death of all children that were in Bethlehem and in all the coast thereof from 2 years old and under. But again, the blare of mortal mind with all its unrighteous decrees could not drown the voice of melody, foretold by the prophet, proclaimed by the angelic host, and afterwards immortalized by him who grew in favor with God and man, by him whose gentleness drew the little children unto him, whose tenderness touched the multitudes with compassion, and whose wonderful love lives on as a vitalizing power in Christianity. The keynote of his mission was harmony, but harmony not of the physical senses, for he said, as I hear, I judge. On this basis, he healed the sick, raised the dead, stilled the sea and storm, and brought life and joy into manifestation. As I hear, I judge. He was always listening to the Father. That's why he could say, the Father and I are one. Mm-hmm. His ear was always open to that voice. From the hymn, I will hear no other voices. I will heed no other call. So it must be with us, that open ear, always listening, even in crowds and noise. And this business of everybody with the TV on constantly, or even their phone looking constantly, or earplugs in your ears, unless you're hearing the truth. But you see everyone out walking, jogging with these things in their ears, even in the grocery store. I don't know how they know what the heck's going on when they're always having this thing in their ears.
They probably don't.
Some of it, maybe they're listening to good things. I hope so. But we don't want to teach our children not to hear the voice of God. So make sure. Go ahead.
And being the kids these days call it doom scrolling. If you're just looking at your phone all the time.
My goodness.
Yes. And you know, it also takes us away from beautiful, loving, human capacity to say just hello to someone. Like, I go for walks and I want to say good morning or something, but people are always tuning to that. And we miss all that beautiful, you know, fellowship with others, just even just acknowledging that someone is there.
Thank you.
That's right. We've got to love our neighbor as ourselves, right?
I think part of the putting all that phone, all the stuff to try to keep us from hearing, you know, all the headphones that you mentioned, I think part of it is also there are thoughts in there. People are hearing things, but they don't want to listen. And exactly. So it's an avoidance of to hear what they should be listening to, but it's there. They're trying to drown it out.
Absolutely. They are, and that's why they have it on all the time, so they don't hear this unhappiness that's going on in their head. Rather than deal with it, It's also why we know they take drugs or alcohol or other things. But we're to deal with it.
You know, I have prayed so much about this because many of my friends were saying that, like, they don't want to listen. And I'm just sharing this very lovingly because it was great to hear this. It's not that they don't want to. It's error getting them to do this so that we cannot listen to our Creator, that divine mind always talking to us. But I learned to be so careful and never to put someone in that. And like I said, no offense to anyone. It's just because that what was said reminded me of this. We must know it's not that they don't want to listen, because they are listening children of God. And as we recognize that, I just got to know that I'm blessing them. And, you know, that gets somewhere to know they would like to listen to divine mind, but error gets them to be tuned to other things. And I think this is scientific, and that's why I'm sharing.
Thank you. So demonstrating our oneness requires that stillness, and then the open ear, the listening ear, always. Just as the example of Jesus.
And the listening ear has the assurance of hear God.
Yes. And in a couple of other articles about I and my Father are one, one states, what is the secret of our ministry? Jesus named it when he said, I and my Father are one. So God with us is very, very important that we're knowing that. And then I'll have Gary read. This is a cute little story about that, too.
This is in the 1903 Sentinel, I guess. Yes. Anyway, by Thomas H. Fleischer, entitled The Christian Register. I like the little story that you have all heard. As the father read the scripture in the family, and the child that was dearest to him sat at his knee, the child who shared his journeys and into whose sport he himself was not too old to enter, when he came to the passage, quote, I and my Father are one, end quote, the child looked up with a blessed insight and said, just like you and me, Papa. Thus, theologies fail and are ineffectual beside the insight of the child's mind that knows that all doors into the Father's heart are open and are never shut, and all access is immediate and ever procured.
So sweet. Mm-hmm. Just like you and me, Papa. Mm-hmm. So remember that your Heavenly Father loving you, and you're one with Him. And it's a sweet, sweet relationship, a loving, sweet relationship. We take his hand and walk with him. Now, the next, I found this very interesting because what Carrie sent me, there were so many, well, three, I guess, which is a lot for this, all about work, working, and how Jesus worked. And of course, it goes along with the Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works. And that Jesus keeps saying, I don't do the works, right? It's God doing the work. And so it's so important that we have a sense of this as we do our work. And Carrie writes, Jesus was the master workman. He retreated to the hills and mountains at night to gain the revelations from the Father that he would need the next day. He was joyful in his holy work and never tired. The source of his good works didn't reside with the human Jesus, but as the Son of God. And then on page 2 of her message to the Mother Church for 1900, Mrs. Eddy says, the song of Christian Science. Does anybody know it?
Work, 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 watch and pray.
Thank you. Work, 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 watch and pray. And it's interesting because she calls it the song. And in a beautiful article by, let's see, Ella Hoag, she translates the song of Christian Science, quote, into the joy of continual radiation, reflection of good, wherein there is never weariness or burden, but only the complete satisfaction of the well done, which comes from God governing, God governed, working, watching, and praying. So if you're tired by your work or exhausted at the end of the day, you should remember that maybe you need to understand that God is doing the works. He better be. And then you'll be refreshed by the end of the day. Gary gave a testimony about that recently.
Yeah. And furthermore, if you want to do your work well, you'd better be letting God do it through you.
Yeah, that being tired in the work means you're just humanly pushing too much.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're too much in it. Get out of it.
Yep.
May I ask something? I think this is the best place to ask about this verse, work, watch, and pray, because many times it comes to me, why is it work, and then watch and pray? I was thinking it's pray, watch, and work. So can anybody maybe expand or say anything about this?
I have a feeling about this. You know, quite a few times Peter had to be told three times in order to get something. And it does seem like a lot of people come and they don't want to work.
Thank you. This is so important. This idea of work is native to your being. People are so unhappy because they haven't found their right work, or they're not doing it. They're lazy. I was rather surprised in some ways. You know, it was Mara that gave a testimony, I think it was this past week, about the work ethic of our church. You know, we always have lessons. I mean, wouldn't it be awful? Hey, I don't feel like doing a lesson this week. I don't think I'm going to write a lesson out. May I just don't, I'm a little tired. And so, you know, the end of the time comes and we don't have lessons. We don't have proofers. We don't have, everybody does their work. We don't have translators, and it's done on time. There's a standard, and it's the stately goings of mind. This is what this is all bringing out. So work is very important. And sometimes you have to work in order to watch and pray. You have to get there. You have to be working. That's my take on it. So work is underestimated these days. And the pandemic didn't help when people stayed home and got checks from the government. If you're not working and feeling God moving and working in you, you're usually depressed and unhappy and full of self. Work is a joyous experience. And that's what these three articles were about. It goes on to say, at night under the stars, Jesus climbed the hill of endeavor to find on its summit the holiness and the revelation necessary to his work in the temple on the morrow. Real joy, true peace, genuine rest. The great world knew nothing of it. They were the fruits of the work of the master workman, the sentinel of principle on the summit of Olivet. Labor there would come to the world with the dawn, the labor from which it was always striving to escape. But the master workman would come with the sunrise down the slopes of the mount to minister to a sick world in the temple courts. Now, isn't that beautiful? He loved his work. Mrs. Eddy loved her work. She worked right up to the end. This idea of retirement and wanting to look forward to, you know, when all you can do is play golf, that is, Peter Ross calls it the siren of ease,
yeah,
I think.
Siren called it.
Yes, so we will not go there or think there. We love our work, and we do it well with a high standard. I know Carol works many times into the night on the work to get her work done, to get the liberator finished. And she doesn't finish it until she feels she loves it, she says. We have a high standard, and we must keep it. And in keeping that, that is obedience to God, and you will be happy. So
yeah, it feels so good to see your work through to the end.
Does. And you know how it weighs on you when you don't.
Yeah.
Your procrastination. Someone talked about that this Wednesday too. Go ahead, Florence. Were you going to say something?
No, if you do it well, you do feel the joy. That is a fact.
Mm. You feel the joy, yeah. And you also feel, wow. And Florence will say this, you know, God did it. You feel like, yeah, yes. It worked out because you knew God did it. It all works out.
And when I had gotten behind the work and then practitioner work, it was like night and day. I mean, the speed at which I moved was definitely very good.
Yeah, she'd gotten way behind on some of her work. She hadn't mentioned it to me. And when I found out, I mentioned it to her. And mainly because I needed to know if she was overworked or what needed to be done. But as soon as she heard it, she got it done in lightning speed.
Yeah, it was a good experience to have that demonstration.
Well, and I think the other, maybe to summarize why work comes first, is that we have work to do. We have a job. We are here for a purpose. We're not here to just, you know, lounge around and you know, enjoy the luxury of God taking care of us. That is not why we are here. We have work to do. God has work for us to do. And we need to be in that right form, that right state of mind, to be able to watch, to be able to pray, recognizing that we have something to do. And part of what we have to do is to handle the resistance to doing it.
Thank you. In this article by Ella Hoag, she says, there is no time to stop working, watching, praying. And why should one seek such a release? Since to continue thus joyously to work, watch, and pray is to enter into the very holy of holies. It is to work as God himself works. And then Jesus declared, my Father worketh hitherto, and I work. It is to prove to oneself that he is the reflection of the divine mind.
Right.
And then this hymn that I've often turned to in the morning before I start my work on 247. Walk with God along the road. Your strength he will renew. Wait on the everlasting God, and he will walk with you. Ye shall not to your daily task without your God repair. Put on your work, his blessing ask, and prove his glory there. Ye shall not faint, ye shall not fail. In spirit ye are strong. Each task divine ye still shall hail and blend it with a song. Mm-hmm. Work, watch, and pray. What a lovely, wonderful, powerful statement from Mrs. Eddy.
Wasn't that Nehemiah that was building the wall?
Yes,
it was.
So he was working.
Yes, he certainly was.
What he started with was the work. And as he was working, he was watching to make sure that nothing could prevent the completion of the work. And you run into an obstacle and you pray for the, what steps do I take?
He did pray right before he went.
Yeah,
he did.
Yeah. He was always praying.
I mean, it's a cycle. I mean, it's a constant, right? But
spontaneous. You don't stop praying because you're working. You don't stop watching.
You don't stop working.
Right.
That's right. Exactly.
And thank you,
Tony. Nice comfy cloud and, you know, and not do any work. No.
Yeah.
It's simultaneous. It's all at once.
Good.
And it also says that he went 3 days before quietly without telling anybody and just to see the site and I'm not sure if it says pray about it. But for 3 days, he didn't tell anybody anything. So that was my thing, that the work is not the first thing. That's why I was saying, isn't that pray, watch, and then go and do the work as we are instructed?
Well, I think it's all, as Carol says, all together. Mm-hmm. It's all important. All important. So we're going to end on a beautiful article by one of my favorites, William McKinsey, called Working, Watching, Praying. Okay. And that order, Ingrid.
He writes, in order to both work and watch, the intelligent worker uses continually the activity of prayer. More than petition for a good finishing of the work is this. It is communion with that which works, illustrating what Jesus said, my Father worketh hitherto, and I work. Mrs. Eddy is unequivocal as to the value of prayer and its effectiveness. Her seeking for quiet was no doubt explained by the same need which our Master felt for communion with mind when he rose before the dawn and went up to some mountain to pray, or spent the quiet night alone under the brilliant stars in communion with that one who was able to bring forth Maseroth in his season, who indeed made the stars also. Many true things have been said about prayer. The words of the poet who spoke of it as the Christian's vital breath and said, he enters heaven with prayer, are true in a way perhaps unknown to the writer of the lines. To enter heaven, in common parlance, means disillusion. In metaphysics, it means knowing what is real. We enter heaven by becoming one with the Son of Man, which is in heaven. Prayer then unites one with principle, and the immediate consequent is joyful activity. And so glad is this activity that it is protected by the worker. He offers no stupor for hypnotism to work upon. He never works by human will as the mesmerist does, and so cannot be victimized by the malpractitioner. Very truly indeed can it be said regarding the true metaphysician what Mrs. Eddy writes in her poems, the arrow that doth wound the dove darts not from those who watch and love. He closes the gate of hearing to the arguments of mental suggestion. He will not allow the lust of the eyes to make mental pictures, and he forbids the pride of knowledge from whispering, ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. Thus, working, watching, praying, he conquers the world, the flesh, and the devil. William McKinsey.
Thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you.